Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Flogger Presents with your host, Andrew Walmsley. Hello everybody, welcome to the latest podcast. In this one we look at photography education in 2018. Is there still a place for university? The associated costs. We look at learning yourself versus the university. A little bit about teaching and all about the future. I hope you sit back, relax and enjoy. Thanks a lot. Welcome to the latest episode, everybody. Today I have with me Stephen from Fez Photography, and we're going to be discussing education, university, and all things learning related. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Now, thanks a lot for spending some time and joining in, because I know you're a busy family man, you're busy lecturing, and obviously you have your hobbies as well, so
yeah, but no, I'm really excited to be involved. So
no, it's good. I think for anyone who doesn't know, Stephen's a lecturer at a local college / university, so I thought it's a great person for everyone to listen to, because he can give us insight that the rest of us might be interested in.
Yeah. Well, I actually, one of the first things that I want to point out is before becoming the lecturer, I was a student only a year before, and a mature student as well. So I've got that whole range of experiences.
Yeah, I think this is a good thing. It's quite unique. Else I know who's done it this way round. Although I've done my degree as a mature student and gone into my area of expertise, to meet someone who's in a photography, who's done the uni course first and then carried on, and obviously people have obviously loved you that much and your work that they've asked you to teach. So I think it's going to be great. And
I think they were just short-staffed.
You just ticked the right boxes, did you?
Yeah.
I'm sure it was much more than that in reality. So let's kick off with, I think one of the main things, the main questions a lot of people are ever going to ask now is there a place for a degree in 2018 and going forward?
That's
say just in general rather than just photography.
In general, yes, I think there's always going to be call for higher education. The problem I think comes with the old catch 21 situation of needing experience and needing qualifications. So you get qualified, but then you're lacking experience, or you've got experience but you don't have the right qualifications, and that's something that needs to be addressed in the future. But I think there'll always be a need for degrees, because higher education changes the way that you approach and the way that you think, in my eyes at least.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. The one thing I got from my degree was understanding more things in life, not realizing not to take things on face value, just because even if it's your mum, your dad, someone you really trusted all your life told you something, I would dismiss anything and everything by everybody.
Yeah.
And research it myself. Because you have to when you're doing your degree, don't you?
Yeah, you have to spend hours and hours and hours poring over research. And you know, I that's the one thing I probably use more than anything else after my degree is I'm always digging that little bit deeper, and trying to make sure that the information I've got is the right information and coming from the right sources.
Yeah. So obviously at degree level, it's there's only sort of certain trusted sources, shall we say, isn't there? But in real life, you don't have these barriers. You just ask someone, I need my door fixing. You just go ask someone. It's very, very different, isn't it, real life? And who's to say that you need to trust anyone, and sometimes you can work things out yourself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've done so much more. I mean, I've never been a into cars or anything like that. But now I'm not afraid of doing a bit of reading, and reading around the subject and giving it a go. For me it was a small win. Well, for me it was a huge win, but in the grand scheme of it was a small win when I managed to change the headlights on the car. But you know, I never would have done it. I never would have done it. I would have just let somebody else do it. But now I will approach those things that I've not done before.
Yeah, that's good. I know when I started my degree, I was dumbfounded by my lack of knowledge, the way you had to write. I mean, this was in my third year. My course leader, or whatever he was called, he sort of like look after me. So each person was assigned someone when you write in your dissertation. And he took my work and he says, "Andrew, I don't actually know what your project's about." And I went, "Oh." So that was just the introduction. And then he said, "You either go away and rewrite it, or you really need to think about this."
I'm sorry, make the audio cut out then.
Oh, sorry, no. So he basically told me I need to go away and rewrite it or have a think. Which, obviously, for someone in my shoes, it was December before I would have been finishing. So that's only 7 months before I was due to finish. And I had all the negative thoughts of quitting, going even more part time. And in the end, I just knuckled down over Christmas, rewrote everything. And when I went back, he actually said, "Right, this is amazing. Is this your work?" He actually thought I'd paid someone else to rewrite it. And I went, "No, I just think I understand a bit better now." And literally, the last 6 months of my 3 years, my grade just went all the way to the top. So,
It's a nice achievement. It's a nice feeling when it does pay off, when you put that effort in, and you're rewarded for it.
yeah, I don't know how you get there. I don't know if it's different for me and you who did it late in life. Is it much easier at 18? I would probably say so.
I don't think it would be. I think as a mature student, you've probably got the mindset more for achieving because you're on a back foot as a mature student. Or often mature students go in with that mindset because you know education is for the young. It's like a continuation, and it's a journey that often the younger generation experience, but we jump in sort of late on. I mean, I was 11 years out of education when I went back into education, and I felt like I had to work harder to prove that I deserved to be there. And I think that's the mentality of a lot of mature students. So we go in with the right intention. We don't get distracted. We don't get distracted by Freshers' Week or social gatherings. Don't tend to blow our student finance on beer on a weekend, and we don't wait till 2 weeks before deadline to start the work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's different, isn't it?
Isn't it?
It very much is. I mean, I went into it 20 years after leaving school.
Yeah.
So for me, my schooling wasn't my schooling wasn't exactly perfect at all. So I actually felt a long way behind the 18-year-olds who'd done A-levels. So I didn't know a lot of things, but I knew so much about life.
Yeah.
So I understood about putting the hard work in, turning up on time. If an instructor told you it's student-led one this week, that's not an excuse not to turn up. It's an excuse to prove to your colleagues that you can stand up and be that person.
Yeah.
And I think all these sorts of things are really good. So what we probably need is someone on here who's maybe 21 and just gone through it themselves.
Yeah.
So I'll work on that. I do know a couple of people. I've actually literally just been in touch with someone who I really like his work, and he's into film photography.
Very good.
And he's just passed with a first photography. You really love his shot, actually. For his dissertation, he did a watch, and he did something like 70 composite photos. It took him 20 hours.
Wow.
So he had like individual screws, like in midair, like the floating away from the watch. So you could see all the different parts and where everything went. It's a cracking actual shot.
Yeah.
And I think he uses a phase one.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, so I'm actually in talks with him about writing an article about it.
About his image or the phase one?
About the phase one, really, yeah. Because it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, like some such high end, I think that'd be good for everybody to see and hear about.
Yeah, they're very, very nice cameras. I've considered selling a kidney many times so I can get one.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying there. So we were discussing whether there's still a place for photography degrees, really. What do you think?
I think they're door openers more than anything else. As I said earlier, with the whole Catch 22 experience and qualification, a degree will get you in somewhere. And it's relevant for the first, I don't know, a few years to start with. And then once you've started down your career path, then it's just an afterthought. But there is definitely relevance in having them, because they will get you jobs that you might not get otherwise. I know that some people I've been on courses with have worked for Channel 4, the BBC, and you won't get those jobs without a degree. It's not something that you can just jump into after picking up a camera and teaching yourself. And that's what I mean. It's a door opener that will launch a solid and stable career.
Yeah. So are you saying that like these sort of opportunities could come about from even being on the course as well?
That all depends on where you study, I suppose. I know that when I started my master's at Nottingham Trent, they organised work experience in several sort of large organisations. Obviously, you're going in and you've already got the degree, you're going for a master's and you're there to work for a week or two, being the general dog's body. But I think as with any job, if your face fits, then there would be an opportunity maybe after you've completed your master's to go and work at these organisations. And I'm assuming it is probably the same no matter where you study. There are connections within those organisations that are open to students more so than maybe those that haven't been in that organisation, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's one of the big things with university life, isn't it, that for some reason someone might get on with a company or they might be keen on their services and hiring future university students. But
I
don't think that opportunity will exist for anyone who's not a student, because why would it exist? Us two, for instance, you've now got your degree in photography and you practice and you teach it. So someone like me, I could go to the same job as you. I'm not going to get the job as well, because you've done the experience, you've done your degree, you've taught, you've done your wedding photography, you've done your portraiture, you know, you're rounded. There's so many great things there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, that all comes down to the job, though. And
of course it does, yeah.
You know, I might be more suited to an academic position now because of the teaching experience and somebody might consider me less relevant to, I don't know, be a studio manager for some fashion label. They might go, well, you know, you've been sat behind a desk and you've been teaching. Whereas you're actively participating and you're going out shooting regularly, I don't have the time. So therefore, you're more current because you are out there shooting on a frequent basis. So it would solely depend on the job, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're definitely right. I know your last point about opening doors. When I finished my degree, I spent about 3 months trying to get into the industry I trained in. Now, that was a long, hard slog. So I had a fair bit of experience from doing the job sort of part-time.
Yeah.
But I had to work voluntary 3 different times whilst I was still working to get some real-life experience, get people to sort of back me and say, oh, you know, this guy's all right, actually. And then that started opening doors for me.
Yeah.
So then by the time I'd finished my degree and I did well, people were then, well, let's have a look at this list. There's existing IT technicians, and then there's someone who wants to join the field, got experience, a great degree. And then when you get in a room and, you know, you meet people like me and yourself, you realise, well, you know, we're not just tick boxers. We're much more than that, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But it's getting to that point, isn't it, where
you
find out if you're going to be getting on with someone.
Yeah, and you don't always get that without something that really makes your personality, yourself stand out.
Yeah.
Because your personality is no good, because at this point, they don't know who you are, do they?
No. And I know that a lot of people that might listen to this will probably argue that, well, there are so many people going to university now and degrees are so common that they've lost relevance. And I know that's
yeah,
something that I said before I went and got a degree. And I think it's kind of partly right, but at the same time, you know, it comes back to the opening doors thing. Everybody does have, you know, everybody has a degree, but not everybody's got a 2-1. Not everybody's got a first. And not everybody's been to certain universities, because every university has its courses that they excel at, that businesses will look for. There is that argument that everybody's got one, but there is still a way of being able to separate yourself from within a crowd.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think then that's down to personality, work ethic, and maybe just how your brain ticks as well. You might think differently.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, where the younger students that I was in class with, I was very jealous of their thinking. They would just seem to come up with some great ways. They'll be able to solve a problem so fast. They'll be able to look at a piece of work, not really pay any attention to it, and they got it so fast. And I think that's quite hard as a mature student as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, we're set in our ways, aren't we?
Yeah.
We've slipped into a regimented way of thinking because we've already been in life, and we've had sort of our creativity and our optimism and enthusiasm beaten out of us with bills and taxes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, how many, you know, 8, 9, 20-year-olds have to think about paying mortgages?
Exactly.
You know, buying a nappy for your child. It's just so, so different, isn't it? But my peers and employers have always told me that's one of the big things in an interview. And my boss still remembers, like, interviewing me and just has openly said a few times to me, you know, I think what you did was amazing with the time span. And I think that's really nice because, yes, it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I don't think we can state how hard a degree is, can we?
No. I mean, the amount of times I almost jacked it in. And being a man in his 30s sitting at a computer desk crying because nothing's going right. It's a terrible place to be, but it was definitely 100% worth it.
Yeah, it's the long game that you have to learn. You might have to wait 3 years for this thing to happen, but if you keep chipping away a bit of time, it'll get there, won't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was how is, let's talk about, say, let's try and word this correctly, a day in the life of a photography student. So, you know, join a course, they're working with you. What's an everyday situation like?
Do you know, it tends to be a lot of self-driven, like, independent work.
Okay.
Because the current way of thinking, especially in the arts, is, you know, you can't engage students by getting them to stare at a whiteboard or a PowerPoint presentation and expect them to retain that information, learn it. So it's all about researching things for yourself, finding the right places to research from, and the term I hear myself using a lot is synthesizing the information. So getting all of that stuff that you've been looking at and commonalities in it, and then taking it into your own style, regurgitating it so that it fits the marking criteria. It's a lot of research. Is just, as a photography student, it's more computer work. You know, you're researching photographers or artists, you're researching techniques. And then every once in a while, we get to go in the studio and take pictures, or we get to go on location and take pictures. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, I currently teach level 3 photography, so I think that's an extended diploma.
Okay.
And the students obviously came on board, as the most degree students, thinking, well, it's a photography course, there's going to be loads of photography. Mm-hmm. In comparison, there's not an awful lot. There's just so much theory that should go into your thinking before you take a picture.
Yeah.
And, you know, in regards of the technical choices, you know, what lenses. So you've got to understand your lens compression and barrels distortion, pre-composing the image, so being aware of your composition. And all these things have to be taught to you in theory before you can put them into practice. So there is a lot of theory work. But after a while, as the course proceeds, it gets less and less because you've done it then and you're just refreshing and rehashing it as you go on.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that sort of sounds like, you know, any course in reality.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's my thinking. I do remember being, you know, on the HND, Higher National Diploma, when I first started my education, and thinking, hang on, I signed on to a photography course to do photography, not to learn about Dadaism and Surrealism or postmodernist expressionism. And I was a bit disheartened by it, but coming out of it the other side, it does all make sense, because I do look back at all that information when I'm planning images now.
Yeah. Because I think the easy part is actually taking the picture, but the creativity in creating the image and the thought process, that's always going to take the time going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it should, but most of the time it doesn't. You know, a lot of us just pick up our camera, we know what we want to shoot, or we have a loose idea in our head, so we go out and we start shooting. And that's great, valid, and nobody's taken away from that. But the moment you start pre-planning and you start thinking of, you know, what's the intention behind this image, is it just going to be a picture of a bowl of fruit? Is it just going to be a picture of a pretty girl? Is it just, you know, going to be a family portrait? And you start stepping beyond that and start thinking about, okay, what emotions am I going to portray and how am I going to portray that? What colours am I going to use? What lighting? Obviously, the effort steps up, but the end result, the end image, will shine in comparison to what you did, you know, a week before that you didn't plan.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. So, if you've got two people, someone who's self-taught and then someone who's been through the education, what do you think the difference is? What do you think the differences would be in terms of, say, technical ability?
Well, see, I don't think you could compare, because there are so many photographers out there, so many really successful and creative and truly inspiring photographers that have never gone into education. I don't think that everybody needs it. You know, there are always going to be people that are born into an art form. There are always going to be people born to paint, people born to take pictures. You know, yeah. But for the mere mortals like myself and probably some of the listeners, getting that education gets you on that step ladder to achieving that. Some people find it easy. Some people are self-taught and they understand colour and they get how to use it. Whereas I never did. When I was self-taught, I was a standard photographer. I was pretty good. I felt proud of my work when I was creating it. But I never really understood how to use colour the way that I can understand it now. Or I knew the basics of what, you know, low-key lighting would give me a moody image and high-key would be bright and vibrant. But there's so much more to it that some people just get naturally. But I had to learn that in education.
Yeah.
So the question was, like, will there be a difference? And I just don't think there will, and it completely comes down to the individual. With education, you have, you know, a year to 2-3 years or however long you decide to stay to refine those skills and to have constant feedback from people that know and people that are there to see you grow and get better. Obviously, self-taught, you don't have that. You have family and friends. We can't always rely on our family and friends to be critical because they don't want to upset. And then you've got Facebook and Instagram. Well, I don't think that Facebook, Instagram is a conducive environment for photography because it's all instant gratification and it's that chasing of likes. And I think that damages photography more than it will benefit you as a photographer because you get stuck into following other people's trends. You see something gets a lot of attention, so you end up shooting like that, and then the trend changes, so you shoot like that. Whereas after coming out of education, you're able to see the underlying elements of those trends, and then you can use those in your own way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think the massive difference, you know, with self-taught, I think the biggest problem for a lot of people with self-learning is how could you actually improve without the knowledge? So let's say, for instance, I picked up a guitar and I started practicing a few chords and thought, oh, I'm getting good. But then if someone listened, you'd see eventually that work would actually not improve, because you've got no one to teach you how to improve, or there might be one little step that you need.
Yeah.
And I think that's a massive thing, where in education you've got that extra person, you've got a peer, haven't you? All parts, that you're doing this wrong, why don't you change this?
Not only do you have the tutors, but also you've got the community that hopefully you will create within the classroom, so all the rest of the students. I know that when I was studying, we would all bounce ideas off of each other. We'd look at how everybody else was working and be really jealous. But we'd bounce ideas, we'd share information, we'd share research, and we'd talk and help each other grow. So it's not just the tutors and stuff, but it's everybody that's in that same environment as you. They're all there for the same reason. And hopefully, you know, you're in a good group and you gel well, and then you're able to help each other grow even.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I think it's quite hard sometimes, because if you're not around these people, so if you say just self-taught photographer, you haven't got that peer, you haven't got a large number of people around you immediately every day that can see the improvement or make changes, because you've got, say, friends like we are. But how many times could you literally meet up and teach me something, or I teach you something? It's just not real, is it?
No, it's not. And we as photographers tend to be a bit, I don't want to use the word, but clicky. We don't get on very well with other photographers. We're very protective of our own work. We feel that we feel threatened by others. It shouldn't be that way, but it quite often is. And that's something, obviously, as a self-taught photographer on your own, going through it and trying to improve, that you don't have that community, because we are separate and we're all taking our journey on our own as self-taught. We have groups on Facebook, but even then, you know, they can be bitchy and clicky. It's not the same. There's a big gap between the two, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's a positive thing for university and higher education, isn't it?
Yeah, in my eyes, at least.
No, I think for me as well, although it wasn't with photography, I can see the benefit, without a doubt. I'm not saying it'd be worth it for everybody either, because say you've already got a degree and you're taking up photography, I think to step into doing a degree or whatever the equivalent of a HNC and D is now, I think that's a massive step, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge commitment in regards to time and as well as finances as well, because they're not cheap. So I think, if you've already got one, unless you feel like it's essential to get you into a specific job role, then, you know, you've already got that grounding in education to think critically, at the very least, and how to disseminate information from what's out there.
No, that's fair enough. So, I mean, you've touched there on obviously the money, and this is going to be a massive thing for everybody. So how do we justify a minimum, say, £30,000 to do
there
a degree
is no
now?
Justification. There is absolutely no justification for it whatsoever. And this is, I think this is my left wing bit coming out, but I just don't think we should have to pay anywhere near that amount. Now, the problem is that, you know, universities and colleges are for-profit organizations, which means that the quality of education in most universities and most colleges comes secondary. They want to be good and they want to provide quality content and quality courses, but they have targets to reach and money to raise. So I don't think those two go side by side. You shouldn't be running education for profit. It's there for the betterment of society as a whole, not to make money from. So I strongly believe that there's no justification for, you know, £30,000 student debt at the end of 3 years. It's just unfair, and it cripples generations of students.
Yeah, and I think that's realistically, that's only a minimum.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have overdrafts, you're probably going to have a bit of accommodation to fork out for as well, and probably you're going to have a part-time job without a doubt now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're both fathers. What do we say to our 17-year-old children when they reach that age, when they're asking us the question? Because I've already thought about this.
Yeah.
It's scary, isn't it?
I hope that by that point, Labour have won an election and we don't have to pay student loans at the tuition anymore. Come on, Jeremy Corbyn. I don't know. I mean, my eldest daughter, Jessica, is 18. She's in college at the moment, but no doubt she will want to be going to a performing arts university.
Okay.
And even though I am a lecturer, I only, you know, work part-time, so funds are limited. To enable Jessica to have an education, we'll scrimp and scrape and make do the same way we did when I was still in education. So, you know, it's sad that we have to put ourselves at a financial disadvantage. But if it means the betterment of, you know, our children's lives, then obviously it's 100% worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to a guy called Nick from Greece the other night, and he's doing a chemistry degree, really good photographer. I'll send you a link to his stuff.
Yeah.
And he's going on to do a master's, and it's completely free. So we were chatting about university, and I think he totally had such a bad opinion of England from an educational point of view. And what can I say? We go across the border, don't we, to Scotland, and it's free there.
Yeah. Yeah, and we used to pride ourselves on our education system, you know, how quality it was with universities like Oxford, Cambridge. found you could go anywhere with an English degree and get a job anywhere in the world. And I just, yeah, it's just a shame to see the education system fall, much like the NHS has fallen. But this isn't a political debate. This is a discussion.
We'll end up there. Yeah, it's. I think for anyone who's maybe not from the UK, listen to this. It's more like the American system where you're going to fund it and you're going to have debt, or your parents are going to pay for it. So the only other way in this country is you basically borrow the money, and then when you start an education and at a certain point of income, you start paying it back in dribs and drabs for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Like myself and I assume are you just under at the minute, Steve?
At the moment I'm just under until I manage to get myself a full-time contract.
Yeah. But for me, it's already 40 to 50 quid a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, God, it's a debt's going nowhere at that.
No. No, it takes a very, very long time to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, you know, paying minimum contributions, you're paying off the interest, aren't you? And not the actual debt. So.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a very strange thing to do. I don't know, you know, if you wanted a car, you've got to pay interest. But this is our own government, which if we do well in education, you hope at some point in life and society, we give back.
Yeah, well, we do. Even as a student, you're still paying tax on everything that you consume, and by getting that degree and getting a salary that's, you know, £30,000 a year, then you're paying tax on that £30,000. So it's in the interest of the government to enable that education so that they can reap a reward in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I'm involved with schools through my job, and I've actually seen a massive decline in budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see schools are struggling, and you know, I think it's like a big worry. So, you know, if I see primary schools struggling, what's happening to the likes of where you teach?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't really talk for the college.
No, of course not.
I don't know too much about what goes behind the scenes. But I mean, you know, it's always the arts that go first in this situation.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, teacher training. You used to be able to get bursaries to train to be a teacher, because obviously they were encouraging people to become teachers.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you can get a bursary or you can get a salaried position, but most of them are maths, English, science.
That's right.
And, you know, there just are no bursaries for the arts. It's very towards the bottom of that list of important subjects, which is a shame. It's a very big shame.
Yeah, I think that's just arts in general, isn't it?
Yeah.
No matter what part of government or business it is, they're always last. It's something I've never appreciated before either. I think until I started my sort of photography journey, I always thought, yeah, you know, what's the point in a painting or a sculpture when people haven't got homes?
Yeah.
It's really, I think it... Morally, it's very, very hard discussion, isn't it?
It depends on whether you put value on the creation of art or value in art itself. To enabling someone to create and to be creative is different to saying that a particular, you know, Jackson Pollock is worth £3.5 million. You know, that's absurd, whereas people being able to use art to express and to communicate is important. You know, that's part of society, is being able to create and express individuality. Also, it's, and in this day and age, it's about the ability to read art and to read media, because we're surrounded by billions and billions of images on a daily basis. Everybody's taking photos. There's pictures on everything, with billboards, bus stops, your phone, you know, in shop windows, and they all have messages in them. They're all trying to tell you, you know, this product will make you happy, or it will make your life better, or you know, or whatever the meaning is behind that image. And something that's lacking in the current generations, like younger generations, is the ability to understand that an image is an advertisement, or a, you know, a video is an advertisement, and the fact that it's not real and it has a message, and it's trying to tell, communicate that this particular message to you. So, and the arts enables you to understand and read an image, so you can decide for yourself rather than being led blindly by somebody who has an arts degree and knows how to use all these different elements to make you feel a certain way.
Yeah, some very clever stuff. I think it's hard for the layman. And I think that's why the arts are a very, very different field.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're so exciting to people like us. One of the things I was wondering about with photography courses then, are they tailored to one area of photography, or is there such things as general ones? Or,
well, yeah, again, that is down to, I think, the level that you're studying at and the course that you go on. So the course that I teach is an extended diploma in photography. So that covers the basics, and you explore film photography. So you learn how to shoot it, develop it, scan it, or print it in a dark room. And then they'll explore different areas and different genres of photography. So, you know, early on in the year, it will be like, we're going to do documentary, or we're going to do portraiture, or we'll do studio photography. And within that, you'll do still life or portraits or fashion or whatever. And then as you progress, you have the ability to become more specific.
Okay.
So, and that goes for the level three course as a whole, but I think as like all courses, all the way up to master's, PhD, I think the higher you go, the more specific you become into like a specialist area. I know that when I did my degree, I went from, you know, a general outlet to pushing everything towards fashion, because that was where I wanted to go. So even though it was a photography degree, like a degree in photography even, I was able to specialize it within that, or I could have just done it open-ended and explored lots of different avenues. When I went over to the masters at Nottingham Trent, I did commercial photography rather than photography, because the photography course was more open-ended and more geared towards photography as the art form, whereas the commercial photography was, you know, photography as a business. So you specified in that whether you wanted to do studio or whether you wanted to do like product and advertising sort of work.
Okay. So that's good for anyone who's thinking about it, that there are ways to specialise. I'm pretty sure people at the beginning won't know anything, will they?
I don't know. I think I when I started, I went in with an idea. I was going to be a wedding and portrait photographer. And then I realised I didn't like doing weddings. And then it became about fashion, because, you know, fashion and portraiture really go sort of hand in hand. So I think a lot of people go in with an idea of what they enjoy and what they'd like, but I think when they come out, more often than not, that vision has changed, even if it's only slightly. I think, you know, that going through that journey changes the way that you think. And the thing is that doing it as a course sucks all the fun out of it.
Right. Because
you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it to have it marked. Now, you know, I probably shouldn't be this honest if this is about encouraging people to go into education. but it does. It sucks all the fun out of it because you don't get to just do it when you want to do it or just shoot what you want to do because you have marking criteria to meet. Now, you can aim projects in a direction that you want, but if you are all about portrait photography in a studio, it's very hard to do a documentary or reporting project on photography in a studio. It kind of sucks all the fun out of it. But then by having that separation to it, you then become aware of actually what it is that you enjoy doing a lot more. So it is to focus.
Well, then I would say, you know, say you're a wedding photographer, you might stop enjoying your photography full stop because mm-hmm. you're only doing one thing.
Yeah.
And to be fair, most of the wedding photographers I know actually love that. But they don't get opportunities to do the other stuff, which I get to do. So there's definitely good and bad either way, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with you there, 100%.
Yeah. From your perspective then, how hard is it to actually teach? Because obviously you've been on the other end. You've been the inexperienced person.
Yeah. I'm still quite fresh. I've only been teaching for a year, so it's all still very new and exciting. And I would say it's not that hard to teach. It's, you know, having to sort of get on at students that aren't hitting deadlines and all the responsible roles of like paperwork, registers and all the data profiling and things like that are the hard elements. But once, when you're in a class and you're just talking about photography, or you're in a studio or you're on location and you're showing people how to do stuff, then it's easy, it's fun. Because you're doing what you're passionate about and you're expressing that passion to the students. So hopefully that comes through and they're engaged. It doesn't always work like that. I've had quite a few classes where I've just been stared at with like glazed over eyes. but you just have to keep at it and try and find ways to get past that and engage them. So the teaching role itself isn't hard. I don't think it should be bad. I think it should be easy and it should be enjoyable. But it's all the responsibilities that come alongside it and all the paperwork and that really makes the job very complicated.
Yeah, I think teaching in general has changed in that sense.
It's been, from what I can see, it's become a lot more target driven. It's all about numbers, ticks and boxes, and maybe not as about each individual learner as it maybe once was, or that it maybe should be.
Yeah, and I think that's not going to change anytime soon either.
No,
but I think if you're a student from this part of view, you've really got nothing to worry about because everything's on your side. A university has to help you. A college, excuse me. Sorry about that. Everyone there has to help you because it's in their interests and their financial interests and their records to get you through. So it's not like you sat at home doing a course where you're by yourself.
Yeah.
So I think in a way for the student, it's become better and better. It's just harder for a teacher, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that nobody puts anybody on a course with the intention or with the knowledge that they're not going to achieve.
Yeah.
And it's, you will only get help as much as you, as the effort you put in. So if you're going to sit back and skate by, then chances are you'll probably get looked over more so than other students that come in and want to learn and want to engage with the course. Yeah. And it's all about you as a person and whether you want to take from it. Because the information's there, the experience is there, and it's your job to be a sponge as a student and just take as much as you can in to, and then process it afterwards, I think.
Yeah, I agree, yeah, that's spot on. So if we move away now from education, colleges and establishments, what other ways have you tried in the past to educate yourself with photography?
Do you know, I even today, I tell my students that there are hundreds of hours of quality videos on YouTube, and they're all free. Yeah. I can't sing the praises of some of the guys and girls on YouTube that are putting out content, because even now I go to YouTube to learn new editing techniques or to learn better ways of doing the ones that I have been doing. And yeah, I mean, it's there. You can do it in your own time. You know, if you want to work alongside a video, you pause, you work on Photoshop, you unpause. So I really rate YouTube, because it's like being in a one-on-one classroom, just at distance. You can't ask that many questions, but you have that step-by-step instruction.
Yeah.
And then just shooting. Just go out and shoot. Make mistakes. It's important to make mistakes. It's even more important not to repeat them. it's okay to make a mistake, but you have to learn from it and figure out what went wrong and then try not to repeat that error.
I agree. I think my number one would be YouTube as well. But there's a few people like Carl Taylor coming through now, isn't there? What's your thoughts on people like that?
I like Carl Taylor. I like, I can't even think of anybody's name at the moment. Scott Kelby's another one. I actually met Scott Kelby very briefly at the photography show in 2014.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I had a bit of a fangirl moment and got a bit giddy, because to me he was like a celebrity. I've got his I've got his photography how-to books and stuff, and I'd watched hours and hours of his videos. So I got a bit like all excited, and I was like, "Hello, Mr. Kelby," and he just sort of looked at me as if I was deranged, and I probably looked a little bit deranged, to be honest. But that's one of my claim to fame, is I'm not messing with him. So yeah, I mean, there are some prominent figures. But you tend to find that as they gain more prominence, they tend to release less information for free.
Yeah.
And it's all about books. It's all about, you know, tutorial videos that are purchased. And I think there's a lot of people like ourselves that have got some form of specialism that we know about and that we are really quite competent at, that share information on YouTube readily. So it's nice to look at these people that have achieved prominence on YouTube and within the industry, but don't forget other people as well. It's like having a conversation with a friend who knows a different technique to you. Just because they're not YouTube famous doesn't mean they don't know what they're talking about. So have a look at a wide range of content, because the way that somebody teaches on YouTube might fit somebody else and not fit you. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, in that instance, obviously you've talked about through university, you're looking at books, you're going to look at famous authors. My argument is, Henry Carter can't teach you anything because he's not alive.
Yeah, that's very true.
So why not look at someone who's still alive and doing this stuff, you know, from your field?
Yeah.
So maybe they are too busy to engage with you. And I know some of the street photographers I've always looked at sell sort of resources now, or they do workshops because they're just too busy.
Yeah.
Oh, workshops. This is something that's really popular at the moment.
Mm.
They're just so ridiculously overpriced.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I know that everybody wants to be a, well, I say everybody wants to be a photographer, but, you know, photography is booming. Everybody has a smartphone. Everybody takes pictures. And more people are starting to take it seriously. So there is money to be made, but I would begrudge paying £1,000 for a 24-hour, well, an 8-hour workshop, or, you know, a 2-day workshop where it's 2 8-hour sessions, and probably the first morning is going to be somebody talking about their portfolio and their successes. And you're coughing over anywhere from 500 to over £1,000 to be in the same room as somebody that you consider to be famous. I think it's close to extortion.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I listen to a lot of podcasts now, and on one of them, someone said something that has just stayed with me. It's people make people famous. There's no such thing as fame.
No.
So, you know, we make, me and you make each other fame by talking about ourselves to other people. So this is what you should do, isn't it?
It is.
People you know.
Yes, 100%.
And the people that you trust with their knowledge and experience. And you know, this is why I've involved you. I want people I trust. It is important to respect those before you.
Oh, 100%, 100%, because they've laid down the path that you're walking on.
Yeah.
You know, it even going back to like Cartier-Bresson, you know, it's people like that have given photography importance. And it's, you know, David Bailey and photographers from the 60s transformed the way that pictures were taken. They didn't transform the technology, just the messages and the style. So everybody that's come before you and that's been successful has added something to the space. And you do have to respect that.
We discussed Nick Turpin, so very, very modern. He's still with us, still photographer. And then, like you say, if you go back to Henry, you'll see massive differences in work. You've got a digital camera versus a film camera. You've got a one lens man at 50 mil against someone who's probably shooting over 200 mil.
Yeah.
I've seen, he did it in London, and he did it on a first floor sort of area looking across the road at the buses. So... It was fantastic photos, mate. It's a great, great book. I'll show you it sometime. But to me, it's not street photography because he was nowhere near the people.
Yeah.
So my interpretation was that I went out to try it. Where we live, it's nearly impossible. I was the only person on the street. There was one bus and about two people on it. So I just looked like some weird peeping Tom looking through a window.
Yeah.
So it was a very, very different experience. you can see, you're picturing it now, are you?
Yeah.
Andy's getting in trouble again. but I think it's good to use all these people because you see where they did it, what time of year it was, what decade it was, what equipment they had. Maybe life was like, history was like. So these are the sort of things that are going to be important to your work.
Yeah, all of it will influence you as a photographer, even whether it's a conscious decision to take an element that somebody else has done and use it for yourself or twist it, or whether it's just subconsciously, you know, appreciating black and white high contrast images. And, you know, that's because of all of the really good high contrast black and white images that you've seen from historical photographers and contemporary photographers. So whether it's conscious or not, it will still affect your work.
Yeah, I mean, when I talk about Nick Turpin with his bus, so what I did there was, I thought, why don't I just do this on the high street? Take a day where it's rained, but it's quite hot, so obviously the, say, cafe windows will steam up.
Yeah.
Cafes are the best place, so there's an area in town that's got a couple of cafes next to each other. So I just walked there, and I got a series of three shots, all with different people, steamed up window, but you could see what the people were doing.
Yeah.
And they're actually some of my favourite shots, and I love taking stuff like that. And that was Nick's influence.
Yeah.
I didn't do the same. We use very different technology.
Yeah.
And even I shot one of them on film as well, actually.
On the Bronica, or?
Yeah, I think it was, mate, yeah.
Hey.
So that's where I think your photography can go up another level, is swap your camera out. Try something on film. Change your settings on your digital camera and,
yeah,
you know, change your lens, isn't it?
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, restrict yourself to a lens. Or, you know, if you really want to push yourself, stop using, like, for a short period of time, stop using your digital camera and start shooting solely with your smartphone.
Yeah.
Because that will give you a real appreciation of everything that's jam-packed into that digital SLR.
Oh, God, yeah. I've been trying out a high-end full-frame mirrorless.
Is it one of the Sonys?
Yeah, and I hate it.
Really?
I don't like saying it, but I feel like giving it back. I prefer my 13-year-old DSLR.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if I am actually a DSLR man. It's taken me a while to find out. And it's my second mirrorless, so it's not not anti-mirrorless either.
See, I've not used a mirrorless yet. A lot of the people that I've spoken to about them rave about them.
Oh, they're amazing. Absolutely amazing what you can do.
I really like the weight and size and the feel of a digital SLR. You know, it's a strange thing to say, but having a DSLR makes me feel like a photographer. I don't know whether I would feel the same way if I was carrying around like a Fujifilm or, you know, one of the Sony A series. Because they're just so small, compact. I mean, yes, they are a lot closer to 35mm sort of size and weight, but there's just something to be said about holding a digital SLR with a big clunky lens on it.
That's the end of the show for today. I hope you all enjoyed that. I want to thank you all very much for listening. Please say a big thanks to Stephen at Fez. Don't forget to check out his Instagram feed. I really do appreciate your time there, Stephen. And I know we had quite a few technical difficulties. Hopefully I'll be able to get them ironed out, ready for the next one. Thanks a lot. Bye.
That's the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to come back again, please do subscribe. You can do that on Anchor, iTunes, Overcast, or any of the other apps. I look forward to seeing you again. If you want to see what's happening with my photography, please do check out my Instagram account, which is vlogger.co.uk. And again, if you want to see anything else I'm doing, please check out my website, which is vlogger.co.uk, which was PHLOGGER.co.uk. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Bye.